And this world's going to be free for the first time in known human history. And it's going to be free in our lifetimes because the momentum has started and it's gathering all the time. Okay, I'm just off to get arrested. I'll see you this afternoon. Okay, thank you. We'll carry on the story. Thank you.
David Icke.
The immigration and the police escort has gone home. What they've done, they've listened to my open remarks about what happened, like, and they've looked at 1,200 people and they've gone, nah. So we're all up. Hey. The revolution's here. I've got to whip through this afternoon pretty quick because I've got so much stuff to get in. And so I'm going to kind of move quickly over some things I usually dwell on a bit. What I was talking about this morning, obviously, was the way that these bloodlines keep turning up in the positions of power and how they come out of the ancient world, and they always seem to end up in the positions of power. But, you know, the human race is an amazing, glorious tapestry of physical form. It's one of the most wonderful things about being on the earth is that how different we all are. And so I think, from my own research anyway, that a lot of different otherworldly sources, if you like, have seeded different streams on the earth. And, you know, it's one of the reasons we all look different all over the world. And one area that's come into my area of research in recent years, and many other people too, is actually the true nature of the history of bars. It's amazing when you get into this, just how much everyone is agreed on in relation to Mars. They agree that there was once a time when Mars had an atmosphere, water, rivers, etc., that could have been a home for life. They agree that somehow that planet's ability to be a home for life was devastated by some kind of fantastic cataclysm. The only question is, when did it take place? Conventional history and science says millions of years ago. More and more, however, independent researchers are saying, hey, maybe it was only thousands of years ago. And interestingly, the geological and biological record of the Earth proves beyond question that in a matter of thousands of years ago, there was a fantastic cataclysm on this planet, or affecting this planet, that almost destroyed its ability to be home for life, symbolized in the endless legends, again, which have made it into the Old Testament, of the great flood, the great cataclysm, the collapse of Atlantis, and all that stuff. It depends where you look and what your legend is, but the theme's the same. Massive cataclysms, Earth clinging onto life. And increasingly, the research is suggesting that the cataclysm that did that to the Earth had the same source that did that to Mars. And if that's the case, then Mars, as a home for life, to the point where it was destroyed, does not go back that far. And maybe there are Earth races that come from there. And more people are starting to look at this, not least because of the stuff that's been found on Mars in a place called Cydonia. This guy called Richard Hoagland's written a lot about this, and many other people too. The so-called face on Mars. And I've just seen a very interesting movie. I've just seen it, Mission to Mars. Very nice movie, that. And again, it has the theme that somehow Earth was seeded from Mars, but it takes the time scale of millions and millions of years ago. My feeling, and I can't go into it now because there's so much to get through to focus more on what I'm talking about today, is there's a very good chance that what we call the white race, or at least part of it, actually came from Mars originally and settled in the Near and Middle East. And again, it's interesting when you look at Cydonia and the relationships between these various apparently non-natural structures, that their geometrical relationship to each other is very, very much in line with some of the ancient standing stones and circles and stuff like Avebury in Wiltshire, which if you want to do more research on that, the evidence is there. In fact, this area where the pyramids are, Giza, the ancient Arabic word for this area, the Giza Plateau, actually was their word for Mars. And there's other names and attachments and connections to the Sphinx which link that to the name for Mars and the symbolic name for Mars. So I think that the Martian story is actually one that in the next few years we're going to see more and more evidence coming to light about, which leads to the fact that actually Mars as a dead planet does not go back that far, and in fact we may have many, many connections with it. What is interesting is that out of that ancient Near and Middle Eastern area, which some researchers link to this Martian race, which they say is the white race, or at least one of them, is a group of people called the Phoenicians. Now, in conventional history, the Phoenicians, who again were a white race, some wonderful books showing that what is said about the Phoenicians in conventional history is actually not true. When you follow conventional history, it mentions the Phoenicians, but like a footnote. Oh yeah, they existed, but now let's get to the important things, all the Egyptians. But the Phoenicians are actually fundamental to understanding so much about the world. They were very, very powerful in this area of the world, in what we now call Turkey. They had a place called Cappadocia, was one of their centers, and all around this area, Tyre used to be a Phoenician center, and they were great mariners. And not only that, they went around in ships a lot, you know. And when you do the research, you find that from this Phoenician group and their travels around the world came so much to explain some of the mysteries. About 3000 BC, they went around Spain and into Britain. And they took with them from the near Middle East so many of the classic British, Irish, Welsh, Scottish symbols. All the classic symbols of the British Isles didn't start in the British Isles at all. They came from North Africa, and provably so. And when the Phoenicians went into Britain, it was they that opened up the first tin mines in Cornwall. And they used to bring the tin back to the Mediterranean. And these Phoenicians, who also moved across land, but particularly by sea, took very advanced knowledge with them. And within these bloodlines, it seems to me, within this Phoenician white race, were some of these key reptilian hybrid bloodlines also. Interestingly, when you look at the Phoenician legends and symbolism and religion, you're looking at what manifested as the British culture. One of the deities of the Phoenicians was called Barati, the female, and they had the male, Barat. Now, because it was an offshoot of the same white race that went into the Indus Valley, taking the knowledge and the stories that eventually manifested as the Hindu culture, you find names in the Hindu culture very close to Barat and Barati, and when you go right across to Britain, you find the same. Barat became Baritan, and Barati became Baritania. And this is a classic depiction of Barati on an image of a Phoenician coin. That image will become very significant soon. And here is a British penny symbolizing Britannia. And the basic legends of the British had about Britannia were the same as the Phoenicians had about Barati. They were the same person. Also, they had two other deities, interestingly, to mention, the Phoenicians. One was called St. George of Cappadocia, that place in what we now call Turkey. St. George of Cappadocia, who fought and defeated the dragon, another constant theme that emerges. And when St. George of Cappadocia went by ship with the Phoenicians, if you like, in their legends, when they got to Britain, of course, he became St. George of England, the patron saint of England, who defeated the dragon. The red cross on the white background that became the Templar symbol and is now the flag of England was the Phoenician symbol, the fire cross of the Phoenicians. And that other deity was St. Michael. St. Michael, which later became a Christian deity, actually was a Phoenician deity thousands of years before that. And when they went off to Britain and parked there, St. Michael started emerging all over the place. There's a place in Cornwall, where just down from where the tin mines are, which is an island just off the coast. It's called St. Michael's Mount. named after the fact that the that deity with the Phoenicians, that's where they had a harbor bringing the tin out by ship down to the Mediterranean. People think that, you know, it all started in Britain. And if you look at it, this is important. It's not just historical naval contemplating, because what we call the British culture has, in so many different forms, become the world culture. And here is a depiction of a Phoenician high priestess. And what they used to use was the swastika. The swastika is an ancient esoteric symbol found all over the world. Now, what the Nazis did, and people think, if you don't do the research, that they invented the swastika. No, no. What the Nazis did, and what all Satanists do, is they take an esoteric symbol and they turn it around to consciously indicate the negative. This is why the classic symbol of Satanism is the five-pointed star reversed, so it's pointing down, not up. Reverse symbolism. You'll find this in the Illuminati all the time as they use this stuff. This is a Phoenician standing stone in Scotland. Again, the swastika, which the Nazis reversed to indicate the negative. Not surprising. Now, all over the west of England, in the chalk hillsides, are white horses, which conventional kind of histories can't understand or explain where they came from. Well, this one is the oldest, and it's on a place called Uffington, in the Valley of the White Horse, named after it, not far from, not really from Stonehenge, not too much of a drive. And conventional archaeology says this was created in 3000 BC, or around then. That's just when the Phoenicians were arriving in Britain from the Middle East and the Near East with this advanced knowledge. Why would they put those, the Phoenicians, on the hillsides of Britain? Because the white horse was a symbol of the Phoenician religion. And so you look at the stone circles of Britain, and this one's Avebury, which is, again, even closer than Stonehenge to that white horse. The massive stone circle and lots of ancient earthworks which connect into it. It's like a circuit board. Here's the stone circle, and this is the biggest man-made or human-made mound in Europe called Silbury Hill, and just down from that circle that you saw, and there's many other earthworks, like, as I say, a circuit board. Now again, who built these? Where did the knowledge come from? Well, the Phoenicians' arrival in Britain also corresponds with the window of time in which it suggested that these earthworks and these stone circles were created. This is Stonehenge. That's a crop pattern, 125 circles that appeared suddenly, and it's amazing how quick two blokes with a stick can work pushing. Isn't it amazing? Doug and Dave? It is amazing. It's amazing how quick. I mean, they must really move with them sticks. 125 circles. And that's the main road there, going from London to the west of England. Now, with the passage of the Phoenicians, there's a lot more to say about them, but I want to focus on the theme of the day. Came hidden knowledge. This is so important. That image that I showed earlier of the pyramid with ignorance in the main body among the masses of the people and knowledge held at the top is so important. I just want to go now through some of the knowledge that these advanced peoples, particularly these bloodlines, held in the ancient world, which allowed them to build these amazing structures, Stonehenge not least, and also the way that they have held it to the present day, and how they want us not to know about it. Again, there's that image. This is the idea. Create a structure. In the ancient world, it was mystery schools. Now it's the global secret society network. Keep the real knowledge here and them in ignorance of that possibility. And one of the great areas of knowledge is the fact that this planet is encircled and interpenetrated by a web of force lines, energy lines. Some people call them ley lines, other people call them meridian lines, the Chinese call them dragon lines. And where one or two of these force lines cross, you get a small vortex of energy, a very powerful point. Where lots of these vortexes cross, you get a massive vortex of energy. Now, energy is neutral. It just is. You know, I mean, energy is just like energy. It's vibrating. And you want to say, what do you want me to do? I want you to be malevolent. All right, I'll vibrate to the malevolent vibration. You're a bastard. I hate you. It's just energy. We impregnate energy with the vibration by our thoughts and by ritual, is the focus, very powerful focus of thought. Oh, no, I want you to be loving now. All right, then I love you. I'll just vibrate a bit quicker, you know. It's just energy. It's neutral. It's not good nor bad. So, you know, these energy sites are not like, it's the occult, it's the devil. It's just energy. It's how we use it. And it's interesting that at these major points where these energy lines cross, that's where these people with this ancient knowledge built the stone circles and these great earthworks. This is where Freemasons invariably stick their temples. This is where the ancient temples were put. This is where the pyramids were put. And a massive vortex point. They understand that. It's just energy. You can harness it for malevolent reasons. You can harness it for positive reasons. And interestingly, it would seem that the heart center of this energy grid, where more lines cross, the very heart center, is what we call the British Isles. Which it seems is why all these ancient people headed there, and why the Illuminati have focused their whole operation out of there. And there are more stone circles, earthworks, and standing stones per square mile in Britain than anywhere else in the world. It's just extraordinary, because it is such a center of this energy. And they know that if you can harness and control the vibration of the energy grid by your action and by your ritual, you are vibrating the energy that we're all living in, because this is not empty space, it's vibrating energy, to the vibration that most suits your agenda. This is a key area of knowledge which we've been kept from, which has been used to control us. This is from a book, a very good book, called Pi in the Sky, Pi P-I, which looks at the energy grid of Ireland and Britain. And again, talks about the fact that this is a massive center in the Earth's energy grid. Also, this is, it's not a very sharp picture, but this is from Chichen Itza in the Maya country, the pyramids on this side of the world, the American continent. When you start to research this and where the Phoenicians went with this knowledge, it's extraordinary. Phoenician artifacts have been found in the rainforest of Queensland. And again, a lot of people don't know this, that in the Grand Canyon, unmistakable Egyptian, including mummies, Egyptian oriental artifacts have been found in caverns in the Grand Canyon, in areas, incidentally, which are still barred to the public. The Phoenician evidence can be found in New England. The idea that Columbus was the first person to get to this side of the world from the other side of the world is utterly ludicrous. And with it, they took this knowledge. So when the Europeans, the ones not in the know, came to the Americas, particularly South and Central America, they were staggered to see the same basic stories with different names, and the same basic cultures and artifacts and ways of doing things were found. It's because they weren't the first people to come from Europe. This knowledge went out a long, long time ago. Another area of knowledge is astrology. Astrology. I mean, what is it?
It's bloody mad. It's the devil. All we know is the stupid astrology.
What is it? All astrology is the science of how the movement of the planets creates a vibrational expression which affects constantly the Earth's energy field. As we live in the Earth's energy field, as those planets move and combine, therefore change the energy field of the Earth, we are affected by it. When we are born, some people say when we are conceived, probably both are true, we take on an energy which reflects where we're born at the time we're born. And as we therefore, with that energy impregnation, go through our lives, we, born 29th of April 1952, are going to have take on a different energy in that place at that time than someone born on January 16th, 1960. The point being that, therefore, as I go through my life, I am going to, with my energy, interact with the movement of the planets and their effect in a different way to someone born in a different place at a different time. It's just energy interacting. Now, they don't want us to know that, so they've demonized it. The Pope says it's evil. I love the Pope, don't you? I love the Pope. I love the Pope when he's going along on that Pope-mobile. behind 3.5 inches of bulletproof plexiglass. You know, I love that. I mean, that's faith in bloody action, isn't it? Hey, isn't it? Anyway, now, while they're demonising it and laughing at it, and of course when you read your bloody astrology in the bloody local paper, I mean, of course not everyone's going to act like that. It's too far out, too generalised. But I know from astrologers who are on retainers from transnational corporation CEOs, and I know from astrologers in Britain who I've talked to, who work with certain people that, people would be shocked if they knew, politicians and business people, etc., that the Illuminati do not cough unless it is astrologically right, because they know there are certain energy cycles when what you want to achieve has a much better chance of happening than if you do it at this cycle. They don't hold summits, takeovers, or anything unless it's astrologically right. But that's another area of information they want that they don't want us to know. And this is a massively important area of the hidden knowledge that these bloodlines have kept from us through their secret society network, the power of the sun. The sun is 99% of the mass of the solar system. It is the flipping solar system. When the sun changes, we change. It's pretty straightforward. And the Illuminati, illuminated ones, they use the sun symbolism constantly, as you'll see. They have known about the power of the sun. Again, it's two levels of knowledge, then as now. Back in the ancient world, of course, the mass of the people focused on the sun because it had an obvious effect on their daily lives, their crops, their ability to live, warmth, power, etc. But at that level, the Illuminati level, where they had access to knowledge these people did not have, they focused on the sun for a very different reason. They knew that the sun is more than a source of heat and power and light. It is a massive generator of energy which operates and projects its energy in predictable cycles. And at certain points, the energy coming from the sun, the so-called sunspots or solar activity, solar flares, are so powerful, they take out computer systems. They've done this. They've taken out power systems. And we're in the middle of a massive sun cycle at the moment, which hit its peak at the millennium. Now, what you're looking at is a sunspot. Some of these things, these arcs of energy from the sun, are 100,000 miles high, apparently. And a few years ago, or earlier in his life, there was a guy called Maurice Cottrell who did a lot of work because of his interest in sun cycles, working them out. He worked out small cycles, medium cycles, and great cycles of this sunspot activity. Later in his life, he came across the amazing information left us by the Maya people in Central America, where they had left us a very different measurement of time and the passage of time. And they have small cycles, medium cycles, and great cycles. One of their great cycles, apparently, is due to end about 2012, not too long from now, when we start another cycle. And I think this is why so many things are happening now. This cycle of evolution is coming to an end, and all that's remained hidden is coming to the surface, which is why there's no way that this control is not coming down in our lifetimes. But what he found, to his amazement, is that his cycles of sunspot activity corresponded almost exactly, even over the thousands of mile cycle, thousands of year cycles, with the Maya measurement of time. In other words, so much of that Maya measurement of time was actually measuring sun cycle activity. And the Illuminati play these cycles absolutely to a T, because they know that all is energy, and if you know how to use energy, then you can achieve far more than if you don't. So this is why they time everything. People say, why don't they just take over? Because A, they can't. There has been a progression. And they play these cycles and they play their cards and their major cards at specific times. No earlier, no later, then, because they surfboard the energy to give them the best chance of success. So in the ancient world, you had a focus on the sun at the Illuminati level because they understood what it was and how it was affecting us minute by minute. And if you know how astrological and sun cycles are going to affect us and affect us emotionally, you know that you're going to have humanity in a certain emotional state as a result of the energy changes and cycles around them, that if you play that card now, you play your war there, you play your economic collapse there, people are more likely to react to that in the way you want. So in the ancient world, again in Egypt, the focus on the sun, and gold became the solar metal. Associated with the solar metal. This is Rome. And again, the lion became a symbol of the sun. This, it seems to me, is why the lion got this symbol of the royal animal, the king of the jungle, the king of the solar system. And again, you'll find on Illuminati heraldry and flags and stuff, the lion symbolizing the sun and the knowledge of the sun. This is Sri Lanka. Again, gold, the sun. This is more recent. This is the sun chair of George Washington, the first president of the United States, inaugurated in 1789, a very, very high degree Freemason. Because the Freemasons, although most of them don't know it, is a organization through which this Illuminati work. It's an organization within an organization. Now, this symbol has become an Illuminati symbol. It's the sun coming over the horizon. And it symbolizes the ancient son of God of Egypt, Horus. The Egyptians used to symbolize the cycle of the sun through the day as Horus, the sun, born at dawn. And so the symbol of Horus is the sun coming up over the horizon, coming over in the east. And then at the end of the day, hence, by the way, we get horizon, that word, and then you follow the cycle to the end of the day, and they used to symbolize then, as the sun went down into the dark place, setting, they used to say that it was their symbol in ancient Egyptian myth of the negative force, the dark force, set. Hence we have sun set. So when the Illuminati use this symbol of the sun rising over the horizon, it is a symbol of the ancient son of God of Egypt, Horus, which these bloodlines certainly go back to. And the symbolism of this sun cult, this Illuminati, is all around us in terms of flags and what have you. This is the Tibetan flag. You have the sun rising over the horizon, over the pyramid, over the mountains, coming up in the east. And Tibet, I mean, the Nazis, who were kind of into this esoteric stuff in a very malevolent way, they were sending people off to Tibet to kind of find out more and more information about this stuff. Tibet seems to be a real depository of ancient knowledge, some of which is used positively, some of which is used very, very malevolently. This is the seal of Arizona. Again, the sun over the horizon. You know, if you just saw one, you'd say, oh, well, it's just the sun over the horizon. You know, it's sunny in Arizona. But this comes up so often, this sun over the horizon, as you'll see as this day unfolds. This is Illinois, where the sun doesn't come out quite so bloody much. Again, sun over the horizon. And this symbol relating to the sun is where we get so many stories that have manifested as what I call prison religions. I think religion is one of the greatest forms. No, I think religion is the greatest form of mind control ever invented. And when you do the research into it, you find some strange areas of where it's come from and how it's manifested in the modern world. In ancient times, they used to use, this is long before Christianity, they used to use this symbol, which is not negative in itself, it's just a symbol of the sun's journey through the year, or the earth's relationship to the sun during the year, of course. They used to draw the circle. They used to put the signs of the zodiac around the outside. Zodiac comes from a Greek word meaning animal circle, appropriately. Then they used to break this circle up with a cross, creating the Four Seasons, who were a very good pop group in the 60s, as I recall. They had that Frankie Valli, who used to sing as if someone was squeezing something very hard. Do you remember him? Jerry. Anyone below my age is going, what's the prat talking about? Who's Frankie bloody Valli? But show him my age. And then they used to put the sun on the cross in the center of the circle. I've heard that somewhere before. Come on. Now, at this point, the seasons break up with the winter solstice, December 21st, 22nd. At that point in the ancient world, long before Christianity, they used to say that symbolically the sun had died because it was at the lowest point of its power in its cycle, in the Northern Hemisphere anyway. 3 days later, on December the 25th, they said that the sun was born or born again because it had started its cycle back to the peak of its power in the summer. And so, deity after deity after deity, pre-Christianity, was given the birth date of December the 25th. If you want a son of God who died so our sins could be forgiven, born on December the 25th to a virgin mother, or even a virgin mother, then take your pick, because there's endless numbers of them. And when the sun reached this point, which we call Easter, it was a fixed point in the ancient world, the sun was symbolically entering the sign of the ram or the lamb. And at that point, they used to sacrifice lambs to the gods because they thought they would look kindly on them in their crops and stuff in the spring, what have you. And so you have the symbolism, thousands of years before Christianity, of the lamb who died so our sins could be forgiven. And what you've got is you've got religious texts, not least those in the Bible, old and new, which are written in two ways with the same words. If you understand the knowledge because you're initiated into it, you see the numerology, the codes, the symbolism in the text, and you read it in a certain way. If you are not in that knowledge, i.e. the masses over hundreds and hundreds of years, then you take the same texts literally, or you dismiss them, but for a long time they've been taken literally. And so you have, in the same text, an ability to pass on advanced knowledge to initiates who understand the coding, and texts which you can turn into a prison religion by taking them literally. And I'll give you an example. One of the ways that it symbolized the sun in the ancient world was as the cycle of a man's life through the year. On December the 25th, they symbolized the sun as a baby. He grew up, and at the peak of his power, the sun's power, at the summer solstice, they symbolized this man symbolizing the sun as a massively strong man at the peak of, course, the sun's power in the year, with long golden hair being symbolic of the big rays of the sun at that time of the year. Hence, of course, the lion, the mane of the lion, the long golden hair, the rays of the sun. When the sun came down in this cycle, symbolizes this man, down in towards the fall into the house of Virgo the Virgin, the house of Delilah, they symbolize this man's son as having his hair cut short because the rays of the sun he symbolized were getting less and less powerful. And by the time they got round here, they symbolized the sun as like old Father Time as we do today. Of course, what have I just said? I have just described the story of Samson, Samsun. And again, we're taking literally across the great spectrum of life and belief. Stories and texts that are symbolic. Now, this is not a negative symbol in itself, I say again, but because of it, what it symbolizes, it became part of the secret language of the Illuminati. And you'll see as the afternoon unfolds how their secret language is all around us, and when you start to see the symbolism, you start to read what you couldn't see before. So this became an Illuminati symbol. This is what the Celtic cross is, the cross and the circle. I took this in a graveyard in Ireland. There again, you've got even almost a symbol sun on there. That's what this is. NATO, as we get towards the latter part of the day, we can see is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Illuminati, which is being manipulated to become the world army, the world police force. They want a world army. They're moving there vastly quickly. And, of course, the horrors and suffering in places like Kosovo, Iraq, and Bosnia have massively advanced NATO's ability to be cast in the role of the world army. Again, the cross and the circle. And that's what this is. This is the CIA symbol. Again, the cross and the rays of the sun. These are classic Illuminati symbols which turn up in the positions of power. I took this image in the city of London, just across from St. Paul's Cathedral, in the heart center of the Illuminati manipulation of the planet. And there you see the same thing. You've got the sun, a black sun appropriately. That image on the face is supposed to be Winston Churchill. Again, very appropriately when you do the research. But again, round there you've got the zodiac circle. And this is on a financial building in the city of London. Now, even in the street plans of the major Illuminati cities, you see the same symbolism, which they understand and other people don't. This is the center of the street plan of an amazing city called Paris. It's the Arc de Triomphe. There's the circle. There are 12 streets going off, creating 12 segments. Again, you've got that same image of the circle, that symbolizing the sun, the arch, and the elements that you saw in that original symbol. Now, in Paris, they've even gone so far as putting the sun on the bloody street around it, look.